So just last night, we were watching that Netflix movie written and directed by Aaron Sorkin. It's called The Trial of the Chicago Seven. It's the Abbie Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, Tom Hayden story, Bobby Seale, William Kunstler, Mayor Daley makes a cameo in the movie. I mean, just from the old clips. But, of course, it's that story about the trial of these seven men who were charged with conspiring to incite riots at the 1968 Democratic National Convention held in Chicago. And the wiki on it is this: on November 21st, and this comes up with a scroll at the end, on November 21st, 1972, all of the convictions were reversed by the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. So most of them were charged and convicted and sentenced to 5 years, but all of those sentences were overturned on the basis that the judge was biased in his refusal to permit defense attorneys to screen prospective jurors for cultural and racial bias. It also says the FBI surveillance of the defense lawyers' offices was cause for a retrial. The Justice Department decided against retrying the case. There were scores of contempt convictions, and I believe most of those were overturned. So they all went on to lead their lives. Tom Hayden was elected many times to the state house in California. Abbie Hoffman died by suicide at the age of 52. Jerry Rubin went on to be a stockbroker, so he kind of saw the light of capitalism, but was struck and killed by a motorist while crossing a street near his home. The one surviving member of the trial team is on a phone line right now, and that's Dick Schultz. He's was the assistant U.S. attorney in charge of the criminal division at the time of the trial with attorney Thomas Foran. Dick, thanks for joining us on WGN. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Really good. I understand that you are scheduled to talk about that case at 3 o'clock this afternoon during an online seminar. I'm reading from the Tribune now, sponsored by the Federal and Seventh Circuit Bar Association. So there's a talk.
And the federal district court.
Yeah. So Jeffrey Cole and Thomas Durkin will kind of moderate and talk a little bit about this, huh?
Oh, yes. Yes, we will.
Are you anxious to talk about it? You must get asked about it a lot, or are you done talking about this?
No, over the last 50 years, I've talked about it a number of times. But the die was cast during the trial when neither Tom Foran nor I was permitted to talk about it, whereas the defendants and their attorneys held two press conferences a day,
yeah,
and did a great job of propagandizing the whole trial.
We have not undone that yet. What do you mean by that?
Well, the whole world heard only from them for 4.5 months in a raucous trial, and we didn't say a word. We were mute. And I'm saying that we were so far behind the propaganda that we never even made an attempt to state what really happened. And I'm going to do that this afternoon.
What's the difference between the myth then and the truth? I mean, what's...
One is the myth and one is the truth. One is what happened and one is the pretense, the way they present it.
Yeah,
but it's Hollywood. It's Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, are you speaking about the trial, or are you speaking about the Aaron Sorkin movie?
Well, the movie is just an extension of what has been going on for the last 50 years, misrepresenting what happened. The movie is entertaining. It's a complete fabrication. But it's fun to watch.
But I'm just kind of interpreting you here. So maybe it's your view that we've sort of lionized these rebels as though they were the good guys in this story, and you don't like that version of history on this case.
Well, let me put it this way.
Okay.
They're considered to be lovable people who came to Chicago during the Democratic National Convention to peacefully protest and to enjoy a music fest. And they were just peaceful people. That's a complete fabrication. For example, when they came here, well, before coming here, they told people, come on to Chicago. We're going to smash the city. We're going to be prepared to shed blood. We're going to fight and die in Lincoln Park. We're going to have 6,000 arrests, 20 to 30 people killed. We're going to pin the delegates in the amphitheater where the convention was taking place. We're going to require the government to use helicopters to get them out of the amphitheater back to their hotels. We're going to flood the Loop with demonstrators and cause the Loop to fall. We're going to storm the Hilton. These were revolutionaries. These were violent revolutionaries whom the public believes from their propaganda that they were just lovable kids coming here for a nice time.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that because there's a scene in the movie where they turn to the city. I'm not sure who the representative is for city, this person at City Hall, but they said, can we get a permit to protest because we're going to be there and it would be better if you gave us a place. This is what they do now. Even if you don't like the message, even if you're worried about the violence, better to organize it and contain it rather than just deny them the permit. I wonder if you can talk about that, and we'll pick it up here in a minute. Our guest is Dick Schultz, and he's actually giving an online talk about this today. He said, I want you to know the truth. It's 3:00. Dick Schultz, the assistant U.S. attorney in charge of the criminal division at the time of the trial of the Chicago 7. And I just noticed in the Tribune today, maybe you saw a piece too, a picture of him. Good-looking guy, this Dick Schultz, the last living member of either trial team, scheduled to give a talk at 3:00 this afternoon. We'll tell you more about that and how you can dial in to watch it. But, Dick, you were just talking about sort of the motivation of these young people that were coming to Chicago, and they said, we're just a bunch of hippies. We're going to have some music. There will be public fornication, they said, and it's not going to be violent. And your understanding of their motivations is a lot more violent, a lot more sinister. There's a scene in the movie where they petition the city for, you know, a permit.
Permit to sleep in the park.
And I guess they were denied that over and over again. I wonder if, just on the city.
You want to hear about that?
Go, sir, go.
They said, a permit to sleep in the park 5 nights. When they negotiated with the city, they told them that there was going to be body painting, nude-ins. I won't use all their words, but they said an orgy in the park. In fact, one of our undercover police officers, yeah, young police officer, was walking through the park during the convention, and the kids were having sex up in the trees. They did not want a permit. They knew Mayor Richard J. Daley was not going. Oh, they also said they had exclusive rights to the park, and the police could not monitor the park those 5 days. With those conditions, they knew absolutely.
I see.
That Mayor Daley wasn't going to give them a permit. They didn't want a permit. They wanted to fight the police when the police pushed them out, which is what they did. And after the convention was over, on the way back to, are you still there?
Yeah, I sure am.
Yeah, on the way back to New York, one of the defendants said, he wrote, all the way home on the plane back to New York, I wondered what we would have done if they let us stay in Lincoln Park at night. They wanted the violence. They wanted to fight the police. They wanted to resist. They wanted to riot. And they did.
There's a scene in the film where one of the Chicago 7 is climbing a flagpole. They're there in the park, and they're doing their speechifying and crowd chanting and all of that. And one of their colleagues climbs up a flagpole or some sort of pole to observe the scene and incite the crowd. The police see him. They drag him down. They hit him with their batons, open up his head. Blood is everywhere. And that was really the flashpoint for then the march onto the hotel. And again, the police look heavy-handed. It's Aaron Sorkin's treatment of it. But how do you understand those events to have unfolded?
They planned before the hotel business. The hotel was on Wednesday night when at the amphitheater where the delegates were going to elect their nominee. They wanted to march there, and they did not get a permit to march. The Secret Service said, no one's going to surround the amphitheater. It's too dangerous. So the day before, the night before, on Tuesday night, Abbie Hoffman in Lincoln Park sat down with about 100 people, yeah. Told them we're going to storm the Hilton tomorrow after the band show program.
Yeah.
Band show was in Grant Park. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the Grant Park program, when everybody, 15,000 people, were dispersing, it was announced. It was announced by Tom Hayden.
Yeah.
And others.
Yeah.
And others. Let's go into the city. Let's go in and, well, when the pigs crawl, we've won. And Hayden said, if blood is going to flow, let it flow all over the city. I'll see you in the streets. And one other thing.
Hold on one second, Dick. At that point in the movie, they depict it as you've described it so far, more or less. But then in the movie, Aaron Sorkin's treatment of the trial of the Chicago 7, they say that Hayden's point was our blood. Let our blood be the one that flows. That is, we know we're going to get slaughtered, but that's the price we have to pay, rather than let's let the police officer's blood flow. What do you make of that?
I think that's very convenient. Unfortunately, Hayden never got on the stand and said that. Hayden did not take the witness stand to say what you just said. He said, let the blood flow, okay? If it's let our blood flow,
yeah.
Then, which is a rather liberal interpretation of it, then let's hear him say that. Tom Hayden never said that.
Hmm. There was also a scene in the...
So the spinning that you just described is made up. It's simply made up, but it's convenient.
Yeah. There's a scene in the movie, too, where they're all sitting there at the defendant's table throughout the film, throughout the several months, and Bobby Seale, the one African-American Black Panther, is sitting there. He doesn't have representation, and there's a lot of discussion about why his attorney isn't there. Can't somebody else represent him? Does he get a chance to represent himself? And at some point, he becomes so obstreperous that they take him behind the scenes and they chain him up, gag him.
Oh, beat him up and beat him.
Beat him up too. Beat him up, chain him up, and then walk him back in with a gag in his mouth tied around the back of his head. What was it like? What was that scene like in real life?
Are you asking me just about the scene or how it happened?
I'm not sure.
Well, let me first tell you, in just a couple of sentences, it takes much more than that. But just a couple of sentences as to how it happened. He had representation. He had a Bill Kunstler, his lawyer, filed an appearance on his behalf and represented him into the trial. And then after the trial was progressing, Kunstler said, I withdraw my appearance. Judge says, you can't withdraw your appearance without a court approval. Okay, so he made a motion before the judge to withdraw his appearance, and the judge denied it. This was way into the trial.
Yeah.
Kunstler said, the hell with that. I'm not going to obey that order. Kunstler stopped representing him in violation of his obligations to the court and to his client. And the reason why he did it is because just before our trial started, 6 weeks before our trial started, the higher court above Judge Hoffman, it's called the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, ruled that a defendant who upsets the trial, disturbs the trial, and prevents it from going ahead can't be removed from the trial. You have to bind and gag him.
I'm short of time here, Dick, and your point is then, so it was another sort of premeditated stunt on their part to ensure that then they would have to resort to those tactics. Did they, at least that's the way the Tribune reports it this morning, did they gag him that way in the courtroom?
They did.
You must have felt bad about that at that time.
Of course, it was a horrible experience.
The judge comes across is not entirely competent, maybe not even all that mentally well, and maybe a little bigoted, if you can be a little bigoted. How would you describe the judge in that trial?
The judge did, first of all, he's highly competent, and he's not bigoted. They were throwing swear words at him every day, screaming the most vile things you can scream, and he took it. Yeah. He took it, and he sat there, and he did the best he could. There were riots in the courtroom. We had fist fights in the well of the courtroom, people knocking other people down on the ground. And he
they
did
don't
his
show
very...
that in the movie. You'd think Sorkin would have seized on that, but maybe because it wasn't sympathetic to his view of this thing.
It happened 15 to 20 times.
I'll be darned. Are you mad about this still, Dick? You sound...
No, I'm not mad. I'm not mad at all. Well, I'm not mad. All I'm doing is responding aggressively to the nonsense. That's all. All nonsense.
That's what the movie is, huh?
The movie was fun. It was a fiction, and it was fun.
You're talking.
That's how everybody will remember it.
You're talking at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Registration is required and available online for free, though space is limited for this online event. I'll tell you how you can sign up for it after the news. The news is coming up next. It's a real pleasure to meet you, Dick. I'm really glad you were able to join us today.
Okay. Nice talking to you.
That's Dick Schultz. He is the Assistant U.S. Attorney in charge of the Criminal Division at the time of the trial. Fascinating story, huh?